89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So here we are. Whoa, Washington is full of so many good humans coming here. And as many of us may have heard, they've reserved 200 parking spaces for buses coming for the Trump inaugural and 1,200 for the Women's March on Saturday. And we go, oh, okay, it's a good augury. There we go. May it all be peaceful and beautiful and powerful and invocative. On Saturday, there's a very beautiful, positive witchcraft, wise craft, whereby we can all weave stamina. Stamina is the thread that the Norns wove, and stamina means we can lengthen and thicken that thread. And so on Saturday, the day is framed between the moon and Scorpio, sizzly, you know, trine Mars in the morning and trine Venus in the evening. And there we go. It's the other way around. Trine Venus in the morning and Mars in the evening. And so we go, oh, powerful time for story crafting, stage crafting. So in our pre-inaugural show, I am delighted to host Terry Tempest Williams, honored for her dedicated story craft that we so need on behalf of the earth and all our relations. You know, many of you know her work: author, activist, naturalist, fierce advocate for freedom of speech. She has consistently shown us how environmental issues are social issues. It's all one story that ultimately become matters of justice. So here is my question, she asks. What might a different kind of power look like, feel like, and can power be redistributed equitably beyond our own species? Yes, coyotes. Yep, yep. And also, just as I told her just now backstage, I go, oh, I did take a little peek at her birthday, born the same day as Bernie Sanders, different year. But the Sabian symbol, the image for Terry Tempest Williams' north node of the moon, where the moon crosses the sun's path, it's one of the directions and gifts we give to the world. And its image is the crown and torch of the Statue of Liberty, the necessity to defend democracy from tyranny. We go, so welcome, Terry Tempest Williams.
Thank you so much, Caroline. It's such a privilege to be in conversation with you on this particular day.
Whoa, yes, indeed. And I know you're driving in a blizzard right now, right?
We are. We're driving from Wyoming into Utah, and it is a whiteout, which seems metaphorical to where we are right now. I don't think we know where we're headed.
Right.
But our hands are at the wheel, and I'm in good conversation with someone I greatly love and admire. I'm present.
That's so kind. And part of the story crafting, here you are, you know, Virgo, like Mary Oliver, like Bernie Sanders, medicine people through the power of language, and I guess especially your kinship in a way with poet Mary Oliver, both of you Virgos, to take the small reverence of nature and tease it into the vast, you know, intimacy with mystery, and we go, oh. And I guess, you know, since we both love coyotes, and we want to derive pluck and jauntiness and strategy from them, I love the last line of one of Mary Oliver's poems. She's singing in praise to this and that, and it ends with saying, I sing in praise to the coyote that came at me with its strong teeth bared, and then at the last moment, smiled. We go,
I love that.
Yeah, no, may that be what reality is. Like, oh no, we can do it. Okay, that's good, you know, good people. But we do want to, yes, definitely discern the danger. And, you know, and Stella Coyote remains resilient and doing all kinds of things and leaping on the bed, even with a fractured shoulder. And whenever I get sentimental, she bites me. and just wow. not, and nips me. And I go, I like that. I like living with somebody I love who's a little bit dangerous. And she's like, cut that out. So I can feel, you know, the tremulousness, and there is such a good spirit coming into D.C. and everywhere now of you know, sane reverence, you know, rising. But then I do, I think of the animals, I think of the wolves, I think of, you know, so much endangered. And I go, and, you know, if Stella Coyote were here right now, she'd bite me going, cut that out, just, what's the strategy? But yeah, there's a lot we do want to look at. And we can go, you know, anywhere you love to go. I have many wise, wonderful quotes from you. You know, the eyes of the future are looking back at us. Shall I read this part of you?
Sure.
The eyes of the future are looking back at us, and they are praying for us to see beyond our own time. They are kneeling with hands clasped that we might act with restraint, that we might leave room for the life that is destined to come. To protect what is wild is to protect what is gentle. Perhaps the wilderness we fear is the pause between our own heartbeats, the silent space that says we live only by grace. Wilderness lives by this same grace. Wild mercy is in our hands. Oh, that's great. Yeah, so
I believe that, you know, and I think especially now, you know, you and I are speaking and with listeners holding this space of the last day of Barack Obama's presidency, and it has been one of grace. Not to say that there hasn't been a vitality of the struggle. There always is in democracy, but, you know, tomorrow we are in a very different political landscape, and I feel that wild mercy is in our hands. And you evoked Coyote, and, you know, just last night we were in Wyoming. It was 9 below zero. It was very cold, big winter there, and there were no tracks in the field where we are staying, And then I looked a little bit closer, and there you could see coyotes' tracks. And I followed them. And what was interesting is they ended up right on the back porch at the threshold of where our door is. And you could see where Coyote had sat down, maybe even laid down, where there was warmth coming from the house. And, you know, who knows how long he or she stayed. And then the coyote, you know, continued on its way. But I thought, what good coyote medicine that, you know, these are going to be perilous times. And when we can stop and take refuge where there is warmth, where there is grace and generosity among our fellow citizens, we take it. And then we continue to move on. And I love paying attention to the animals around us. As you know, we live in the desert, and the other day I was sitting outside. There was such stillness, and then all of a sudden, overhead, I hear the wing beats of ravens. And just this beautiful reminder that we are not alone.
Right.
And I think we can call on the animal spirit to guide us, whether it's badger and holding on to the roots of democracy, or coyote being the trickster, the same with raven, or bear who knows the wisdom of hibernation. I mean, for me, these are my mentors, as I know they are for you too. And I have to say, Caroline, I don't talk about that publicly very much, but I appreciate the space with which you create this kind of conversation of how we live our private lives.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, it is democratic animism time that, you know, we humans are humbled, and we get the word human from humus, dirt, and from which we get the word humble. We're meant to be humble in the dirt, and again, the acknowledgement we're not going to get out of this, you know, horrific pickle by ourselves. It's by ourselves that got us into this pickle, and only by cooperating with nature's ingenuity in the form of so many inspiring beings on this planet, you know, that's the Renaissance that wants to rise. And you, where I resonate and appreciate so much of what you're dedicated to is, yes, let's partner, let's become, you know, you have a whole, you know, when women were birds, You say, once upon a time when women were birds, there was the simple understanding that to sing at dawn and to sing at dusk was to heal the world through joy. I love that.
And without joy, I don't think we can go forward. And when, excuse me, when I think about joy, you know, there is the element of sorrow in it. But we can hold these opposing emotions at once. And I think if we do have joy, then we can participate in the dance of democracy, not out of despair, but out of love. I've been thinking about how line by line, step by step, we wander along a path unknown to us. But in the process of discovery, we do come to recognize ourselves in each tree, each plant, each bird, and face our longing to reconnect with the larger world beyond ourselves. And to me, that is what democracy is this world beyond ourselves. It's not about a brand. It's not about a deal. It's about our future, and that we hold the past, the future, and the present within us as we engage. And that's what I think is being asked of us now more than ever before, that we engage, that we're awake, that we will resist, we will create, we will build a society to match the scenery. Beautiful public lands that Wallace Stegner speaks of.
Right. Yeah, and partner with what we love. I'm so grateful to the Standing Rock team for, you know, innumerable things, but also for tossing the word protester into the cauldron and ladling out protector, which is so much.
Isn't that beautiful?
It is, because as I have not yet tired of saying, the word protest comes from testes, which is to grab your balls and affirm something. it is, which is why women can't testify. We can ovify. In fact, the whole earth is ovifying right now, and so to be protectors, guardians, defenders, partners, and why, you know, the dedication of the likes of yourself to language and story crafting is such a crucial form of magic and intimacy. And, you know, I was going down to, you know, I've been to a number of gatherings, and on my way to a kind of Code Pink rally at Bus Boys and Poets in D.C., you know, I was listening to C-SPAN, and they had the Dementors, Kellyanne Conway, and, you know, Spicer, the new press secretary, all spooky, spooky Dementors. But they were very, very organized. And they talked about how you craft a message and then you sell it, you know. And then it went down to our group, our kind of team of progressives, and they were all yelling, fight, 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 resist, 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 and in one long tone, like, no, we're going to fight this thing, we're going to do that thing, we're going to fight, 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 we're going to resist that thing. And then they were fighting over who had the microphone, and I go, oh, team. You know, we want language crafting, and at another gathering last night with some Native allies, we were going, yes, what do we want? Better chance. When do we want them now? It's like, you know, come on, team. Where's language crafting? You know, kind of bring that, you know, into play and story crafting, and I think rising up, you know, everybody rising to the occasion. That there is a huge opportunity that Coyote will be presenting to us as the razzmatazz swindle becomes evident to everyone. There'll be a whole lot of people without a story going, wow. And so I think, you know, it behooves all of us to be inviters going, come on over here, you loose filings liberated from the swindle. You know, here's sane reverence. We need everybody. We need, I mean, right? Do you feel like spiraling out, you know, the invitation to sanity?
Right. And I think what you're saying about story, you know, story bypasses rhetoric pierces the heart. And this is what I think is always required of us, is that we speak from the heart. We speak out of the truth of our lives. And it isn't about messaging. It isn't about, you know, in my mind, sound bites in any stretch of the imagination, certainly not spin, but this rooting, this deepening, this slowing down of language to where we can hear it and feel it and absorb it. And that's where I believe empathy resides.
Yeah, and just to quote you again, this beautiful quote from our guest, Terry Tempest Williams, that the human heart is the first home of democracy. It's where we embrace our questions. Can we be equitable? Can we be generous? Can we listen with our whole beings, not just our minds, and offer our attention rather than our opinion? Oh, that's a good distinction. And do we have enough resolve in our hearts to act courageously, relentlessly? I mean, that's also, coyotes are relentless. I'll chime in on that one, living so intimately with them. They're just relentless. And without giving up, trusting our fellow citizens to join us in our determined pursuit of living democracy.
Carolyn, I was just going to say, and I would love to read the passage that follows that.
Mm.
The heart is the house of empathy, whose door opens when we receive the pain of others. This is where bravery lives, where we find our mettle to give and receive, to love and be loved, to stand in the center of uncertainty with strength, not fear, understanding this is all there is. The heart is the path to wisdom because it dares to be vulnerable in the presence of power. Our power lies in our love of our homeland. And I think, you know, as a Westerner, as one who lives in the American West, where most of our lands are public lands, you know, this is one of the things where I feel so strongly about finding the deeper stories in our inheritance of the open space of democracy, because even as we speak, there are bills before Congress. Our own Congressman Rob Bishop is hell-bent on selling our inheritance, selling these public lands for profit to be in the state hands, which then puts it in the hands of developers. And so we, too, will be called to be protectors, each and every one of us in our own home ground. And I actually look forward to that conversation. I look forward to the stories that will emerge because, again, I think this is what constitutes our character as responsible, caring human beings on the planet, even in the United States of America, that at this particular moment are anything but united.
Right. Yeah, looking forward to the stories, because, again, just to remind all of us, you know, that, you know, language is magic. We track everything back to its originating, liberating impulse. This is really what Trickster is. And that includes language. And so inaugurate comes from augur, the diviner in all of us who would walk out into nature and whereby nature would speak to our hearts and discern the responsible human who would then be inaugurated. Well, that's what it really means. So I am so delighted to have you here that we can, you know, just stir, you know, begin invoking and enchanting, inaugurating our guiding story. You know, what is it we really are inaugurating?
Well, I was just going to say, I think that's such a beautiful way of putting it. You know, what are we inaugurating? And I think in this country at this moment in time, especially with the president-elect, still at this moment, has confused democracy with capitalism. And I think that's an important distinction, and that we have mistaken political engagement with a political machinery we all understand to be corrupt. So I think it's time to look at the web of relationships that can sustain us rather than destroy us, looking at cooperation rather than competition, you know, calling out corporations and what they destroy rather than our own communities and what we encircle and inhabit and engage, as you suggested in the beginning, not just for human beings, but all beings.
Yeah,
that notion of, I think this is critical at this moment in time.
Yes, and manners, even among predator prey, nature has manners. I love two previous guests who had their PhDs in predator-prey, and they said everything has manners. And they said if a prairie dog is quite near its home and there's a hawk overhead, it will communicate. I think it's a little wiggling of eyebrows going, "Don't bother, hawk. I'm right by my den. And the hawk says, "Thank you very much. I'll eat you later," and soars off, you know. And I remember also the only creature that ever defeated Stella Coyote was, because she was really a great hunter, was a praying mantis. It was really interesting, you know, like praying mantis kung fu. And so it did its little dance, you know, again, these beautiful dances, and Stella would come around it and no, like a little praying mantis thing, like we're probably kind of all doing in our minds here. Then, you know, and then she actually, after a while of doing this, she bowed down in respect and trotted off. I'm like, wow, praying mantis. Oh, there we go. And I did want to just bring up, again, something I often refer to, but I do like it so much, about coyote strategy, that I've seen the hidden camera footage of this, which is coyotes will watch humans laying traps and come along behind them, and then spring the trap with a stick, right, to protect themselves and others. And then, for coyote, just for attitudinal flair, they pee all over it. And I think that's excellent counsel. Watch the traps, spring the traps so that they hurt nobody, and pee all over it just for, because that amuses coyote. I think that's a good way to go.
That notion, again, of being trickster, of watching, of being attentive, of, as you suggest, you know, springing the traps and then peeing on them. I mean, I'm interested, Caroline, in your perception of what's happening, because you are not a stranger to Washington, and you do have certainly as a radiant person that you are, but also being very politically savvy. What do you think is called for in these next few years?
Whoa. Yes, well, you know, it's part of, you know, the ever evolving. It's why I'm kind of conjuring a whole new sort of body of work to cahoot with everybody. You know, it's called Citizen Trickster, which is, it's Bodhisattva Coyote. You know, it's again, all the trickster and qualities and wiliness of nature brought into, you know, dedication to collective being. But before, yes, we all want to think about this next 4 years, but, part of my impulse, you know, going, and how shall I participate? There's so many things going on right now, and I mean, in this city, and tonight, it's like, I think I'll skip tonight. And then somebody, Kamala Harris's office actually said, here, you can have, through a friend, you can have tickets to the inauguration. I'm like, I do report on the underworld, but I think not. I think that might be a little, although it's, you know, who knows. But my impulse, because there's so many great friends coming, is there are deep, secret, powerful mojo places in this city, you know, designed. There's a really great book. It's not a New Age flaky book. It's a wonderful book called the Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. And it's, you know, Masonic, but there was a lot that was put down intentionally to kind of await animation to protect democracy. The archives, outside the archives, is a statue of Isis, not the terrorist group, the goddess of nature. And the archives are on top of a slave block where they used to sell slaves. There's all kinds of things going on. But many of these things were dedicated, you know, to be kind of brought alive. Washington has more intentional zodiacs than any city in the world. The founding fathers, they were into all of this, you know, and they kind of placed things in the city to be activated at a time of need. And I go, that's part of what I'm drawn to, kind of go sit near zodiacs. And, you know, there's the the obvious visible work, and then, you know, and of course we love We love Indivisible. I don't know if you've seen this, the Citizen Guide to Effective Organizing. It's it's online. Everybody, search Indivisible, which is so effective. And again, it's everybody. You know, it's small groups from Richmond, Virginia. You know, gathering to inform their political representatives and go, this is so great. And again, the stirrings of democracy, so that it's not just fight and resist. And I want to. You know, at any point when you have more fun words that we might, you know, rather than resist, because, you know, in Aikido, you know, resist is a losing move. And we go, oh, we understand, and fight, you know, the very hot word, you know, but any words that, you know, you might want to prime the pump and pour forth so that we can have many, many words. So we can sometimes, if we want, use the word fight, but not always. It's like in the progressive team, the word fight was used 3 times per sentence. And it's like, oh, it's very hot. I mean, do you have other words that you can conjure for fight and resist?
Well, you know, the word that just comes into my mind is embrace.
Oh, that's great.
You know, and, you know, how do we embrace democracy? How do we embrace the shadow of democracy? Mm. You know, I love what you're saying about these touch points, these zodiacs, as you call them, you know, around the nation's capital. I think of the statue of Gandhi that is in Washington, D.C. I think about, you know, 15 miles to Virginia, McLean, Virginia, you have the Grand Falls, the Great Falls that come through the Potomac and through this bottleneck and emerge with tremendous power, you know. I think about the museums of the internal spaces that can be gleaned. So to embrace the power that is in D.C., beyond whatever president inhabits the White House, and to embrace that vision that still remains, I love that. So that's one word you've given me in this conversation.
Embrace and also embody. These are embody
yes.
Democracy. Well, and also Great Falls. That's where I live. I live on the Maryland. I live on the Maryland side, just a half mile. Yeah, from this huge swoosh. Yeah.
I just love that place, and that was a revelation to me. And I loved that in the middle of the Great Falls, you have all of these turkey vultures. Again,
yes.
I love paradox. You know, that's another word I would introduce to the vernacular that you and I are speaking of right now. I think paradox is really important in terms of our own awakening, that we can embrace paradox, we can embody paradox, and still hold the space that is required.
Yeah, and then also just, you know, because you touched on so much. Yeah, so I live just out of town, 3-minute walk to the river where Stella Coyote and I still send wishes downstream into the, you know, capital. But the museums, just to touch on the unlikely, forgotten, but stirring qualities, there's an amazing piece of art in the museum, Smithsonian Museum of American Art. It was moved there. And in briefly, its story was, there was a black man from South Carolina, from Ellery, South Carolina, living in the district, James Hampton. Nobody knew who he was. But he had a vision of the Virgin Mary appearing on top of the Washington Monument, who told him to build this throne of the third coming of grace to this country. And nobody knew about it. He died, and then a Washington Post reporter was going to rent the garage that he had, and they opened it up, and it's like, and it's like some Aztec ingenious Egypto architect, and it's all found. It's like gum wrappers over light bulbs. And there's a mysterious language. The only thing it says in English is fear not. And there's this fantastic throne and these fantastic things. And I've always felt that was a kind of secret soul to the city and to the country. And there's a couple of people coming in which I go, we can go, you know, yell on tomorrow at the inauguration. But how about I take you to this secret, powerful place here, this James Hampton?
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. And when I'm in D.C., I always pay my respect to the Thomas Moran paintings that, for me, are windows into our national parks and the landscapes that, in my mind, have given birth to our imaginations here in America. And those are those beautiful window paintings of Yellowstone, of Grand Canyon. And they are huge. And you can just stand there and almost walk into that landscape, even though you're in an urban setting. So I think you remind us that beauty is its own form of resistance. And the secrets that are held by our founding fathers and mothers of how they survived tyranny, whether it was abroad or at home. So I think what I am holding on to right now is a long view. You know, not the short view, but the long view, and really holding that space of gravity and calm, even as my heart breaks, even as my nervous system feels frayed, that beyond that, there is a resolve in my heart to embrace what I love, to embody the ground that I stand on and stand for. And to me, that is the open space of democracy.
Oh, and there's...
open heart.
We're going to take a very, very short break, but you've already given us another wonderful word, resolve. Resolve. It's really great. Our wonderful guest is Terry Tempest Williams. This is Caroline Casey, the Visionary Activist Show, and we'll be right back after this very short break from Taj Mahal.
She shook the constellation and dazzled them crossed his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them crossed his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Grab my indigo sky ship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and our perfectly splendid ally guest today is Terry Tempest Williams, that we may conjure, that we may feed our hearts, that we may augur and inaugurate a guiding story of sane reverence, you know, partnering with all the qualities of intelligence that we love in nature, you know, how to, again, whatever we love, let's think of ourselves as its agent in the human court, and that quality of partnering. And and Terry, do you know Ursula Le Guin's short story in, I think it's in a collection called Buffalo Girls, about the little girl who survives a plane wreck who's taken in by coyote? Do you know this story? It's very short. Let me just provide it to us. And you're still there, right? Oh, we might have lost her in the blizzard.
No, I'm here.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
Yes. Right.
Oh, boy. I was like, the blizzard, did the blizzard take Terry? Yes, I should mention also to our team that you know, everything real, everything metaphoric. Yes, Terry Tempest Williams is driving through a whiteout blizzard right now on her way back to beautiful Utah and the land that we all love so much, a place where our souls live. But just very briefly, I love that Ursula Le Guin story. And it's a little girl survives a plane wreck and she's taken in by the animals and she lives with coyote. And a rancher poisons coyote. And grandmother spider summons the little girl and says, you got to go back and live with the humans. The little girl says, no, I don't want to. The rancher killed coyote. And grandmother spider said, oh, coyote's always being killed and coming back. Don't worry about that. But we need you to go back. And we'll send, you know, blue jays and crows and ravens and stuff. We need you to be our agent for us in the human world. And it's just, you know, I love that story.
I do too.
So again, you know, whatever we love, and you know, and I think of the Uwa people in Colombia when Standard Oil was going to, I think if Standard Oil was going to destroy their land, they at first thought they would kill themselves, and then they thought, no, wait, and they did deep months of ceremony, and they asked the oil to hide, and Standard Oil did three drillings that came up dry and packed their bags and left. You know, and so, you know, even in Washington, D.C., I'm up for this kind of thing. And right now, part of me is like, oh, wolves, hide, you know, just, you know, don't trust the humans, you know, all of that. And then this quality of, you know, to protect what we love, let's become like it. You know, to protect wolves, become like wolves. To protect coyotes, become like coyotes. To protect water, become like water. But, And for you, I mean, you love the land, and when women were birds, and we share a love of coyote and badger. I love it. Yes, badger medicine. It never gives up. Never gives up. But is there somebody who comes to mind that you'd like to become like, some creature, some element?
I am really studying badger. You know, my husband and I, Brooke, last March made the decision to purchase some oil and gas leases during the Bureau of Land Management auction, with the idea that, you know, the BLM cannot tell us what kind of energy we're going to develop. The energy we're interested in developing is to fuel a movement to keep our fossil fuels in the ground. And when Brooke and I went to the land that our leases were on, and I say were because our leases have been denied us, even though we are now appealing it with the Department of Interior. When we first went to see the lands that were now, you know, under our lease, the first presence that met us was badger.
Ooh.
And very, very close to us. And she popped up, and Caroline, I did not know that badgers have blue eyes.
Wow.
And that's how close she was to us. And all around her were prairie dogs, and they were not afraid. It goes back to what you were saying about good manners and about a certain protocol that is maintained in the wild. You know, they were chirping, they were giving their alert calls, but badger was not interested in prairie dogs in that moment. I felt that badger was really holding that ground, and that we had something to learn from her. So I'm doing everything I can to learn about badger medicine, about how badgers behave, how they are shapeshifters. They know about being above ground when it's important and below ground when it's important, and that they are the keepers of the herbs and of the roots, and that they are tenacious. I don't know if you saw the story recently, but there was a biologist that saw coyote and badger hunting together.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah.
Don't you love that?
Yes.
So I think what that says to me is we will find unexpected allies,
mm-hmm.
and that we will cooperate together. And, you know, for those of us living in Utah who've been working so hard with the tribes, with the Bears Ears National Monument, personally, I have been so moved and inspired by the elders. Whether it's Jonah Yellowman, who is a Navajo spiritual leader, or Willie Gray Eyes, or Regina Lopez White Skunk, a Ute leader. And she said to President Obama, you know, it is time for us to walk our prayers. And that's what I'm thinking about every day. You know, what are my prayers, and how can I walk them to make them manifest?
Yes, and I do know that animals do like that when we do that, and just, you know, as I am an entheo enthusiast, the sacramental plants of kinship, and I know that when I come home from such a journey and I'm still with the plants, Stella Coyote and the cat, they go, now you're in our world, let's go romp, let's, you know, I love that. And but the unexpected allies, you know, in our telepathic kinship, and yeah, badger, we're bringing badger into our council, and maybe even imagining a giant badger over the city. You know, I mean, I do, when you said, you know, and what do you recommend for our next 4 years in Washington? I'm like, woohoo, okay, there's many things, you know, indivisible and all kinds of stuff. And, but also, you know, this magical cooperation, this James Hampton throne of the third coming, the, you know, the zodiacs, the, you know, remember that Dick Cheney is allergic to pomegranates? I found that just a wonderfully mythologically interesting thing. So it's like, so imagine a giant pomegranate over the city, you know, and a giant badger. Cause
right.
I do know people who are, you know, who their primary medicine is badger medicine, and they never give up. You know, they...
And I think about... go ahead. They never give up.
No, you know, it's like, lucky enough, that's who we want, you know, as our advocate in the hospital or our advocate anywhere, because they're like, no. I mean, I'm...
So right.
Yes, back to you on Badger, yes.
And I think about Hermit Thrush, you know, singing between intervals of thunder at dawn and at dusk. I mean, I'm just paying attention, as you say, to different strategies. You know, the patience of great blue herons. It was amazing in Bluff, Utah on the winter solstice. There's a remarkable artist who lives there, Joe Paycheck.
Yes, I know him. I went for a walk with him. Yes.
Well, you know how amazing he is.
Yeah.
And did you see the sculptures of the 38-foot herons that he made? He created the aperture, and then the feathers were made out of four different species of sage. There was the sand sage, the big sage, the feather sage, and then inside the heart of the sculpture was holy basil.
Mm.
When they shot an atlatl, which is, you know, an ancient prehistoric, it's almost like a precursor to the bow and arrow. They shot an arrow of fire into the 38-foot heron. It ignited. The fire went up the neck of the heron. It gleamed. The flames focused on the head. And all of a sudden, all of us circling these herons, the heron's head bowed until the second heron ignited. And it felt like an act of grace. It felt like, I don't even have the words for it, Caroline. It's just that in that bow of the burning heron, it was an evocation, a provocation that we are now called to protect those that cannot speak in the language of humans. And so whether it's badger, whether it's coyote, whether it's grizzly bear, whether it's black widow, whether it's praying mantis, whether it's prairie dog, you know, I feel that we are their allies. And at a time where our leaders in Washington, which I do not feel are leaders, I feel that they are followers, are poised to sell our public lands, our inheritance, which means really confining the other beings in this country and on the planet to pain and even extinction, we have to speak, we have to sing, we have to dance, we have to engage and ignite this kind of radical empathy in action.
And you've said so many beautiful potential chapter titles, like I loved you saying singing between thunder. I go, woo, that's really great. And great blue heron. Yeah, and we do have these friends. You know, there are great blue heron near where I live still, even though that's getting more and more built up. And there was a great blue heron who just loved my wolf dog. And whenever we go for a walk, it would leave the canal and you know, fly through the woods, which is not easy for a heron, right? It would just go from branch to branch to come with us on our walk. It was so charming. Yes, these acts of grace that you say, and all homage to, you know, Joe Paycheck, who did with one of her wonderful Jennifer Stoll, take me to see the Yei, the divine being that people sometimes call,
right,
call shaman. But, you know, it was really powerfully great. And we talked about, because I asked him, you know, about, you know, many friends in Bluff, and every now and then I go, ooh, living in Bluff, very attractive. But I did like when we were taking these walks, whenever they found the stones piled up as path markers, they kicked them over. And I was like, huh, well, okay. And I asked Joe, and I go, well, is there a tourist with golden retrievers going to get lost or whatever? But he's like, but we got into a wonderful conversation about fending off mystery. And he said, no, I'm in favor of, you know, kicking them over. And he said, sometimes, you know, when the Mormons, and as you say, they used to value stewardship, and may that be, but she said, he said that, you know, sometimes when they come to a particularly sacred spot, they start singing, you know, just sort of irrelevant nonsense songs louder and louder and louder as they get to this powerful place, you know. And it's like fending off mystery. And we go, no, we want to, yes, embrace, embody mystery. So, yeah, and so many great people who are, you know, wedded to the intelligence of the land, like yourself, and give it voice. And yeah, to make an invisible, heartfelt, dedicated, art-crafted inner dedication that then unfurls a path of opportunity. I mean, I think part of the dynamic of now is inward dedication magnetizes outward opportunity. So for everyone to feel, you know, the important clue about, well, what do you love? What plant? What river? What animal? What badger? What whatever? And see, I also love great storytelling ally Gioia Timpanelli said one of the great themes of fairy tales is careful living in a particular place. And she goes, this badger, this tree, this thing. And,
yeah.
And so for everybody to go, you know, that tree, that heron, that badger, that, you know, and as Ursula Le Guin says, and if you're in the city, you know, nature that you love will send emissaries everywhere, you know, the right bird at the right time for the thing. You know, these are all auguries. And
well, I remember the last time, you know, last spring when I was in Washington, D.C., I was near the Capitol, and all of a sudden this cardinal, bright red, landed on a forsythia, bright yellow, against a blue sky, and I thought, all things primary, right here, right now.
Mm.
And, you know, last Saturday, Brooke and I were home in the desert, and, you know, I was aware that PEN America had ignited this resistance, Writers Resist, all over the country. I think there were 90 different communities participating. And all of a sudden, we just thought, we can do something here, you know, in Moab, Utah, right, adjacent to, you know, Arches National Park, Canyonlands National Park, the Great Colorado River. And we called Andy, who's this great independent bookseller back at Beyond Books, where you can find Ed Abbey's books. And we just called and said, Andy, what if we gather tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at the bookstore, open it up to the community, and people can bring, you know, a paragraph about freedom, a paragraph about resistance, a paragraph about love, whatever will give us courage at this moment in time. And he was so great, he just went, absolutely. The doors were opened. We had close to 100 people in less than, you know, 24 hours organizing. And it went on for over 2 hours of community members standing, talking about their love of place with great locality. You know, a friend of ours, Matt Gross, who is a great protector of Red Rock Wilderness with the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, he stood up and talked about seeing a pile of bear scat in Mill Creek Canyon, just outside of Moab, and they couldn't believe that there was a bear possible here. And he just went, no, that this is bear. It was fresh. It was steaming, you know, even as there was snow on the ground. And they moved on. They walked on. And sure enough, around the corner, there was a bear. And he was so great. He just said, here's what I've learned. And here's what we can take with us at this moment in time when democracy may still bear. And I just loved how each person brought their own mythology, their own stories rooted in place to this gathering. And I think that's what we can do, each of us in our own way, in our own towns, cities, home ground, with the people we love. We can gather. We can give each other strength. We can share our stories. And we can resist, insist, embrace, and love this place we call home.
Beautiful. And as you also write, you know, finding beauty in a broken world is creating beauty in the world we find. And we go, yeah. And as somebody,
and it's not abstract. And that's what I think is so important. It's very real, in real time, real spaces. And where I come from, in an erosional landscape of mesas and buttes and windows where the wind blows through, it reminds me that even in an erosional landscape, there can be beauty. There is great beauty. And we have to face the wind, realizing that there is a deep patience that can carry us into these places of mystery where we don't know what's ahead, but we do know the ground we're standing on.
Yeah, and a friend says, you know, beauty is always available to the reflective mind, and you know, and this quality of defiant joy. And again, from the wolves and wonderful allies who spend a great deal of time with wolves, and they said, you know, wolves, very structured pack, you know, but they play every 30 minutes, even when they're being hunted. You know, even when they hunt, and even when they are being hunted, they play every 30 minutes just to keep in the game, just to keep it as a survival, defiant joy and playfulness, you know, is also part of our brew. You know, and then this kind of willingness to cooperate with larger forces. It's you know, the intelligence of the Arctic that, you know, kind of booted Shell's boat out there. It sent a giant iceberg, right? Because friends of mine were there, and when Shell was setting up its a drilling rig, a great ally David Grimes said, you know, way on the horizon, just out of the blue, came this giant iceberg, dum 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 dum, and headed right for the rig. And the Shell people said, this shouldn't happen, but we better go. You know, and then it broke right. down, and the towboat broke down, and we go, right, there's larger, whimsical, liberating our hearts, playfulness with big mystery that we want to, you know, but also I do want to bring up, you know, we're discerning danger. I mean, we do want a clear-eyed look at the thing, you know, because, again, coyotes and all creatures, they do study the danger. They go, you know, and so right now, you know, it's like, I do love that the word that gets translated to us as evil from Aramaic, in Aramaic, simply means unripe. We go, okay, evil means unripe. And what do we do with unripe things? We put them in a giant brown paper bag, you know, a giant brown paper bag descending over Congress. But I go, but these are also kind of incompetent evil or unripe beings, but very organized, but incompetent. So there's Rick Perry, who thought that being energy secretary meant being a global ambassador for oil and gas. And it's Mr. Oops, you know, forgot that he wanted to get rid of the agency he's being appointed to. Mr. Oops, that's the nuclear arsenal, Mr. Oops. Like, oh, Lord, just, and then of course, the EPA nominee, Scott Pruitt, the Oklahoma Attorney General, who's sued the EPA 19 times, 8 cases are still pending, right? Are you going to, you know, he dismantled the Oklahoma EPA, you know, and not regulating fracking. I think Oklahoma's had 2,000 earthquakes in some fairly recent time frame, you know, and the promise to the Koch brothers and the gas and oil party and the thing. So do you have any thoughts or desires about, you know, the living experimental organism known as Scott Pruitt before us?
You know, I have. Here's what I notice in myself. When I start losing my equilibrium, when I start hanging out in this place of rage, and it is not sacred rage, but, you know, I mean real anger where I lose my focus, I think the thing that scares me the most is how easily we are distracted. And I think that's a strategy of this incoming administration, and that's something I'm really trying to work around against. You know, how do we stay focused? How do we have that kind of focus and ferocity and playfulness of the wolf that you speak? And, you know, I have watched Tillerson and Pruitt, right, and, you know, every single one of these cabinet members, and it makes me insane. Because it's as though you pick the person who most loathes that agency and put them in charge. And, you know, I go mad, I will be honest. And this is where I have to live close to the land, otherwise I would spin out of control. And you don't have a name like Tempest without a consequence.
So I love, I think we can engage that. I know, I love your name, but yes.
But you know what I'm saying, and I just think we have to be clear about what our gifts are, what our intentions are, how important it is to stay focused and to be attentive, as you say, and defiant in our love. And that's where I just keep trying to ground myself in the midst of this whirling of distractions, where I find myself spinning out of control.
But remember Lewis Hyde's wonderful comment, because it's true, we want to see everything but not be overwhelmed by conniption fits. But, you know, Lewis Hyde saying, Coyote is lucky if enough con men show up to school her. We go, oh, we're very lucky. Because that is, you know, again, observing these between world beings for so much of my life, going, they do study a thing, right? You know, and go, Well, which is why, you know, I know how coyotes take down, you know, a big thing, because they come up behind and nip,
right,
nip the Achilles tendon, which is very surprising to dogs. Dogs are like, that's not in our rule book. What are you doing? Just counting coup, going, I could have taken you down. But, you know, they do study the thing, and they are relentless, but they also have some glee, you know, and so I was thinking of your Tempest just for the fun of it, you know, and that I don't really want to have an impact. I want to have an imp act. Cause
yeah, that's so great.
Yeah, so.
And
so,
I do think we have to find humor. I mean, when I was listening to Betsy DeVos,
yes.
When they asked her, you know, how do you feel about guns in the schools? And she said, well, in Wyoming, you know, they have a fence to protect the children from grizzlies. So in the event of potential grizzlies, I do think we should have guns in the schools. And I thought, as though grizzlies are the enemy. You know?
Right. Right. No, that was...
I mean, you couldn't make these things up. And in that sense, you know, I do think we have to be light on our feet. I think about six memos for the next millennium by Calvino. And his first lesson of what qualities we will need to survive this millennium is lightness.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, if you turn that inside out, it is darkness. So the capacity to have night vision. You know, that's another thing I'm trying to develop.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
I'm actually spending a lot of time watching owls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do they do that? And they're so quiet. And they're, you know, so I just feel like there's infinite knowledge around us in the natural world where we can maintain our wildness, where we can remember proper protocols, where we can keep our manners. But by the same token, we can be shapeshifters and highly attentive. Just last week, I watched a sharp-shinned hawk outside our kitchen window for probably 2 hours. That hawk never moved. It just watched. And after the first hour, it made one motion, which was it changed direction. And then it watched the other direction for that hour. You know, and I just thought, that's the kind of patience I want to embody.
Right.
And so, you know, there's gifts all around us, and I think we have to be fierce and compassionate at once. I do think we have to support one another. We have to keep a lightness about us, and then know when the moment is to take down that which threatens to kill us.
Exactly. Thank you so much. We're on our way out all too soon. I hope we keep cahooting in perpetuity, Terry Tempest Williams. Thank you so much. Thanks always to Timmy Olmsted in Washington, D.C., Erica Bridgman in Berkeley. I'm Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com for a free, wonderful call on Citizen Trickster. It's all available there, and we will reconvene next week. Thanks again, Terry.
My deepest bows.
Oof.
Sunday here again. This is Philip Muldery, host of The Sunday Show. Join me and my guests every Sunday morning, 9 to 11. We'll be talking about politics. We'll be talking about the state of things around us. Plus, we open the phones to your called-in questions and comments. That's every Sunday morning, The Sunday Show, on community-powered KPFA.
Annual Bay Area Flamenco Festival returns this February with performances by world-renowned dancers and musicians direct from Spain's Gypsy Roma community. This year's featured event takes place at San Francisco's Herbst Theater on Sunday, February 19th at 7 p.m. with a thrilling performance by Jose Maya and company, joined by the legendary singer Juana La Del Pipa. For full festival lineup and tickets, go to BayAreaFlamencoFestival.org. The festival is sponsored by KPFA and benefits Bay Area Flamenco. The festival takes place at venues in both San Francisco and the East Bay from February 12th through February 25th. For more information and tickets to all events and workshops, go to Bay Area Flamenco.